just want to use that as a tool for changing performance because it hurts clients too much. In a state county system like Minnesota's, it's also really important for county governing boards to play an important role in overseeing human services agencies. And we found that most county boards are involved in some aspects of human services, like setting staffing levels, budgets, maybe some hiring and firing decisions. But for the most part, they had little impact and were very, their involvement in performance management was very limited. In part, that's because the Department of Human Services wasn't putting enough performance data in their hands to do that. The report raises one other issue. Minnesota statutes have a variety of laws and regulations or laws regarding human services boards and governance. They're very confusing, and they overlap, and we think they need reworking so that the specific responsibilities of counties are clearly articulated in state law. The final challenge that we raised in the report is that the Department of Human Services and counties need to have a stronger working relationship. In our opinion, based on interviews and other evidence, DHS county working relationships have deteriorated over the past couple of years, and the problems in those relationships have contributed to difficulties discussing policy and policy implementation. From the county perspective, they want more. They want DHS to seek their input on important policy changes. Counties want DHS to help legislators understand the local fiscal impact of human service policy changes. For the most part, when DHS does a fiscal note to the legislature, there may be a mark saying there's a county impact, but there's generally not a lot of information about what that might be. And finally, counties want DHS to provide more performance-based, county-specific information so they can understand how they're doing relative to other areas of the state. Meanwhile, DHS officials think that counties sometimes drag their feet on state-initiated policy changes or thumb their noses at performance concerns that staff at DHS raise. Clearly, you know, both parties can play a role in this issue, but we do think that as the lead agency for the state, DHS needs to take the initiative to start rebuilding these relationships. So we have one whole section of the report on challenges. That's chapter two. The second big section of the report deals with what kind of structural changes did Minnesota consider. Minnesota is one of 11 states that involves counties significantly in delivery of human services. Our study, though, led us to the conclusion that a full state takeover of human services is undesirable. There are a lot of different reasons about that. First, we found little evidence that a full state takeover would actually materially result in big changes in efficiency and effectiveness. Second, it's risky. There would be hundreds of millions of dollars that the state would have to take over in cost. We have existing staff-client relationships at the local level that are very valuable and important, and the same with relationships between counties and providers. The other issue is that we think if done well, there's some value to local oversight. And as I mentioned before, we think that local oversight can be improved. But again, if it's done well, the local contribution to the human services system could be valuable. Although we don't see a pressing need for a complete state takeover, we do think that the legislature, DHS, and counties could consider whether some programs or functions could be moved from the counties to the state. We asked, in particular, county human service administrators what they thought might be likely candidates for that, and they raised a couple that they think might help them out and also for the state. One is adoption services. There are quite a few counties who do very few adoption cases every year, so that might be a an opportunity. Child support enforcement. Some of the child support enforcement work has to do with locating parents that are out of state. That might well be done centrally rather than at the county basis. Another is long-term care eligibility determination, particularly treatment of assets. This is a very, very complex area of our health care law, and that might well be best served through a central team, probably of lawyers, at the state level to help work through those eligibility criteria. We also think more county human services agencies need to consolidate. Back in 1973, Minnesota tried to encourage more counties to consolidate their human services agencies. And at that time, the Association of Minnesota Counties said they thought there were quite a few counties in Minnesota that were too small to effectively deliver the full array of human services programs. 30 years later, we have 5 of 87 counties who are involved in multi-county human service agencies. We think that number should increase. Consolidations can enable counties to achieve a critical mass of staff that would allow them to specialize in certain areas and perhaps expand the services that are offered in those communities. We think consolidation would help foster consistency in the delivery of human services among counties, and it could also lead to efficiencies in administrative costs. We understand the consolidation is politically difficult. It's hard for counties to determine what kind of pay scales should we have. How do we merge existing staff? Might somebody lose a job if we were to consolidate our agency? So we understand that it's difficult, but we think that consolidation of county human services agencies needs to be on the table for discussion. So what do we recommend? There's lots of recommendations in this report. Let me run through first some of our recommendations to the legislature. We suggested that the legislature establish ongoing state and local working groups to deal with issues of simplification and funding. We think that DHS should have some additional authority to act when counties don't meet performance standards, something between persuasion and cutting off funding. We think the legislature needs to clean up the statutes that define how counties are involved in the governance of human services. We think the legislature should authorize pilot projects for the transfer of responsibilities from counties to DHS. We recommend pilot projects here because this is a significant change, and I think it would be prudent if we would go down that path to start small before expanding statewide. And finally, we think the state should provide incentives for local human service agencies to consolidate. That could come in a variety of different ways. It could include financial incentives. In the 1970s, the legislature provided grants to counties that wanted to explore the feasibility of consolidation. So that's one avenue to pursue more consolidation. Another might be to adopt the public health model, which says that there needs to be a minimum population threshold in an area to receive state funding, and then again, counties would have to combine to reach that threshold to get their human services funding. Another option might be to give DHS some authority to link reorganization with human services performance. You know, as I said, it's a big priority to improve performance data and performance measurement. And if DHS and counties, determine a county that's really struggling, one of the intervention methods might be mandatory reorganization of that human service agency by combining with others. We made recommendations to DHS. First, and again, I want to emphasize this, which I think one of the key issues that needs to be addressed sooner rather than later, and that's developing performance measures and benchmarks across program areas, using that information more strategically by providing county-specific performance data and using it across program areas to identify those counties that are having difficulties and may not, in fact, have the administrative capacity to deliver the full range of human services. We also think that the department can be more assertive in addressing service gaps and improving assistance to counties in those areas where the evidence shows that perhaps it's not meeting the needs of counties as much as it should be. We also think counties need to do a better job. We recommend that county boards step up to the plate and exercise stronger oversight over their performance of the local human service agencies. This could include monitoring how a county's performance compares with others, signing off on performance improvement plans, or by helping human services agencies find external support, and external assistance. So, that was the report in a nutshell. What's happened since we released the report last session? First, the legislature did indeed establish a task force on simplification, to deal with simplification and funding issues. The Department of Human Services published a county document that outlines its commitment to improving communication and service to counties. And the Association of Minnesota Counties and MACSA, the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators, went through the report, and they went through the recommendations as well and identified what they think their priorities should be and also action steps on those key recommendations. And that's just a teaser. I know they're going to come up here and talk to you more about that, but I did want to let you know that the counties and DHS have gotten the report and are using the report. I'd like to just leave you with a couple of closing thoughts here. First, our report, the conversation starter. This is a really big report, and it raises some very difficult but important challenges. We think there are significant questions that need to be addressed. First, what do we expect counties at a minimum to be able to deliver in terms of human service? In terms of human services. Where should administrative authority be assigned? What is the minimum level of administrative capacity that's acceptable at a county level, or where do we think consolidation really needs to take place or other changes need to happen? And finally, this all needs to go past the discussion point. And we really do think that real administrative reforms need to be made. And we hope that this committee will kind of lead the discussion on that. And with that, I'm done. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And it really was, thanks for all your work on this, because it really was there's a lot to this report, and I'm sure it was a lot of work to get done. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deborah, if you could fill me in. I almost get the sense that maybe counties and DHS don't meet on a regular basis, but is there an opportunity or is there a regular forum where you're sitting down with the counties in discussing these issues? I understand you that you've pulled together some things in the last few months, but is there a forum where you can regularly meet and talk through these issues, you know, maybe meeting a couple times a year or whatever?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are actually a lot of small work groups that take place between various program areas at DHS and counties that deal with specific program issues. And I'm sure that Ms. Singleman from DHS can tell you how many there are, but it's dozens. DHS does meet with the Association of Minnesota Counties and NACSA, but I think their experience over the last couple of years is that tackling some of these big issues, it's a whole lot harder than tackling small programmatic kinds of issues. And it's really some of these bigger questions about allocation of authority, agency consolidation, minimum levels of excessive toll performance. Those are a lot harder to drive on into, and those are the questions that we would urge more communication on.
Yeah, thank you. A couple questions. What if the county is struggling because they don't receive the support from the state? What kind of tools do they have, does counties have, to address performance problems stemming from the state?
Mr. Chair, Representative, some of the smaller counties have fewer resources. You know, larger counties have their own infrastructure, for example, to do their own research, their own data analysis. They have a greater capacity to analyze their operations, identify problems, and work out solutions. I think the smaller counties struggle with that kind of administrative capacity, and that's what we mean when we say we think there's a capacity issue in some counties. And I think that the county representatives that will follow will have more to say about that. But I think the ability to deal with those performance issues absent DHS assistance varies significantly.
Follow-up question, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what's the ratio between the number of state employees versus the number of county employees?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have the answer to that. I'd have to look up some more information and get back to you.
And then what is the turnover, voluntary versus involuntary, with those employees also?
Again, Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have the answer to that.
And in coming back to the counties, you know, you identify them, the problems with the counties, but a number of the counties, if you get out and talk to them, they'll talk about the disconnect between them and the state, not getting support from the state.
Mr. Chairman, I could just respond to that.
Yes.
We agree. I think a big part of this report is telling that story, because we too went out and talked to a lot of counties. There's an awful lot of field work in this evaluation in getting the opinions and the perspective of people at the county level. We sent written surveys to county human service directors and county commissioners, and we also went out and talked to a lot of them face-to-face, as well as talking to the representatives from their various associations. So a big message in this report is the perspective of the counties. We think that the state does need to do a better job, as Mr. Nod was saying, of helping counties, particularly small counties. But, you know, I think one of the lessons we learned is that this is not just a problem of small counties. Hennepin County, our largest county, one of the largest counties in the United States, is cited in our report as one that struggles to deal with the complexity of the human service programs. Now, they struggle in part because they have many more demands. They have a population with a lot of needs, many language challenges, but they struggle too. So I think it would be a wrong impression to suggest that this is just a small county problem. I can tell you that even in my own office, where we have very bright, intelligent people, trained auditors and others, we sometimes have a hard time reading the statutes and determining who is eligible for certain programs. You really have to sit and work it through, spend a lot of time with it. And when you're dealing with, and specifically to your question of turnover, I know that in some of the eligibility determination evaluations that we did when we went to Hennepin County, not to some small county, getting people able to deal with that complexity and keeping them on the job after you've trained them, it is a huge problem. Again, even in a large urban county like Hennepin County. And we sat with those people and went through the job that they do. We didn't just talk to them about it. We sat with them and went through the form and looked at the regulations and looked at the law and tried to make our own determination so that we could determine whether they were doing it correctly. And we struggled with the complexities. And so, you know, again, I think the counties have a lot to complain about. And I think we're delivering, in part, their message to you. And it's a message, though, I want to repeat. It's not just a criticism of DHS. It's a criticism of the legislature. And only maybe in the privacy of this room will the legislative auditor be the one to tell you. But you're part of the problem.
All right, Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, well, to that point, you know, we sit here and chuckle, but we got to take this serious, because last week I sat at a meeting with people that are having challenges with mental issues, and they're the ones that are suffering through all this, you know, so we better take note of this and help out the individuals that are receiving these services.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just amplify, because, you know, there's a real risk here that this just starts to sound like a discussion about bureaucratic process, and it is a discussion about that, but the ultimate impact is often on people, is on people, not often, always. Somebody's going to either get service or get denied service. Somebody is either going to be served well or not served well. So the impact, the ultimate impact that we ought to worry about, we ought to be concerned about that human service worker that's sitting in a cubicle, you know, 8 hours a day trying to figure all of this out. But ultimately, we also need to worry about the citizen, the person, the family that needs the service. And they're at our mercy.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I want to echo the sentiment of thanking you for the great work on all of this. And it's obvious that there's a lot that goes into this. I have a couple of questions. First of all, this morning we were in a hearing with the Healthcare Access Commission. And there was a lot of talk about cost and, you know, where a lot of the costs come from. And it occurs to me to ask you, with regard to this, if you have any sense of how much inefficiency there is in terms of cost with some of these problems that you've identified. I mean, you know, if we, for example, just what you were talking about, having the difficulty in determining who's eligible for a program, obviously if it takes a worker 3 hours instead of 20 minutes, there's a certain amount of cost there that's unnecessary cost. And do you have any sense of what the potential might be to streamline the cost factors if we were to fix some of the issues that you've identified?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, we don't have specific measures or quantification of inefficiency, but I think the report makes clear that there's inefficiency in the system and it varies by program. And the inefficiency comes in large part from the complexity of the systems and the amount of time it takes to make eligibility decisions, the amount of time it takes a client who may have to correspond with a county worker or a state worker 3 or 4 times to get up enough evidentiary documentation that they are in fact eligible for the program. We know in Minnesota Care, for example, and other healthcare programs, the state's trying to improve efficiency through HealthMap, a computerized automated data system for making healthcare eligibility determinations. That project has gotten quite a bit behind, to put it mildly, schedule, in large part because they've had an incredibly difficult time translating, you know, 10,000 eligibility rules into automated algorithms for that system. So it's not that the state and counties aren't trying to improve efficiency, but the complexity of that system is certainly contributing to the gains that could be made from those systems. So I wish I could see dollars for you, but I think it varies by program and it's linked to complexity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm more looking for just even a guess. Are we talking about 30% or any idea at all?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, no, I can't give you a percentage. I'm sorry.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, a slightly different question, too. In the session before the one we just finished, I think I recall that we passed some legislation having to do with unfunded mandates. There was a system set up for counties and local governments to report on mandates that they felt were should be eliminated. And I just wonder if in any of this work, if you heard anything about that, if they're using it, if they think it's not useful, or anything on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, we've heard a lot about unfunded mandates in our discussions with counties. I think it was one of the biggest themes that came up from the county representative. But no, in specifically that procedure for trying to deal with unfunded mandates, no, I don't have any information on that, but the county representatives who follow us might be able to speak more eloquently on that.
Thank you.
President Gottlieb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's kind of clear we've helped make our own mess, and I understand that Representative Loeffler's committee, part of your work group at least, will be to work on some of these things to streamline it and clean it up so we have something we can act on perhaps in the coming session that would help get at this. But it's discouraging to me that this has gone on as long as it has, because I've heard rumblings about this for a long time, and it just seems high time that if there are some ways of simplifying eligibility or streamlining the work between the state and the counties, that we would get to it.
Well, thank you for coming down and for all the work you've done on this. It's really great work. We'll have now Ms. Singelman come up from the department and give her reactions and answer maybe some of our questions as well. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Lynn Singleman, and I am the Chief of Staff of the Minnesota Department of Human Services. In that role, I serve as the primary senior management liaison between DHS and the county. I appreciate the opportunity to share our perspective on the human services system in Minnesota and the roles played by DHS and the county. As the Office of the Legislative Auditor's Report points out, Minnesota is one of only 11 states in the nation to have a state-supervised, county-administered system of human services. The state's role falls into five main categories as outlined in the OLA report: policy development and leadership, policy implementation and standard setting, training and technical assistance, information systems, and oversight and monitoring. DHS provides or administers services in three main areas. That would be services for people with disabilities and those who are a danger to society, services for people who are deaf and hard of hearing, and processing Minnesota care applications. The rest of Minnesota's public human services system is administered directly by the counties, which are accountable to local elected officials. Like any system, Minnesota's human services system has advantages and disadvantages. More control at the county level can make government more responsive to local needs, yet it also can lead to greater variation in services and outcomes across the state. Over the years, legislators and administrators at both the state and local levels have struggled to achieve the correct balance. This administration has made a concerted effort to listen and respond to counties. In Governor Pawlenty's first term, former Commissioner Kevin Gagneau and I visited all 87 Minnesota counties at least once, and we have an ongoing relationship with the County Leadership Association. More recently, Commissioner Ludeman directed that we develop a comprehensive work plan that both builds upon work already underway and addresses some of the recommendations of the Legislative Auditor's Report. You have copies of the complete work plan to review more closely at your convenience, and I'll briefly cover the key points of that plan. Regarding DHS and county interaction, DHS will provide a senior management liaison to county directors, elected officials, and their professional leadership organizations, MACSA and ANC. DHS's commissioner and or senior management will continue to participate in forums with county leadership. DHS will also annually review a list of ongoing and time-limited DHS county work groups, committees, and task forces with ANC and MACSA leadership. In regard to the legislative process, the work plan commits that DHS will meet with AMC and MACSA leadership annually in August to receive county recommendations for technical and budget and policy legislative proposals that will be considered through the established DHS budget and legislative process. DHS also meets with AMC and MACSA leadership within 10 days of the release of the governor's budget to review the governor's budget with them in more detail. Regarding administrative simplification and reform, DHS leadership will review annually with ANC and MACSA leadership reform activities that are pending and underway. The DHS work plan also proposed additional efforts on county performance measurement and committed to a project that would address simplification and change in service delivery. But as we indicated when the plan was developed, those work plan items have been supplanted by the legislation to establish an advisory committee to work on those same issues. As I said, the work plan is new, but in many ways it builds on work that was already underway that addresses many of the OLA report's themes, including reform and simplification, increased efficiency, improved performance measures, improved assistance, and greater interaction with counties. I'd like to briefly touch on the work that I'm referring to. It includes ongoing DHS and county work groups and committees that were mentioned earlier. We have approximately 80 work groups that exist to implement program changes and address administrative issues. This is a tremendous joint effort by DHS and the counties. And for your reference, that list is included, it's attached to the work plan as Appendix A. The Governor's Mental Health Initiative and the Minnesota Mental Health Advisory Group. Those efforts simplify some county and state roles regarding responsibility for mental health treatment. Certification of Children's Mental Health Service Providers. This is an effort that was developed in response to feedback from counties and providers in hopes of reducing certification and recertification processing time. Another effort that is currently underway is child support service delivery and program policy redesign. And as you note from the OLA report, this was an item that the county and the state were interested in addressing. These efforts are working to both improve processes and to look for ways to simplify policy at both the state and county levels. Another effort is our healthcare business process redesign. This is another comprehensive effort to simplify administration of our programs and improve services. To meet the requirements of the Federal Adam Walsh Act, we recently legislation was enacted this year that will transfer licensing background studies to DHS. This would have been very difficult for 87 counties to implement. We're also simplifying our county review process. We've begun to revamp our approach to collecting data and information regarding local administration of services. And finally, we've developed a model contract language for home and community-based services. This was in response to county's request for standard contract language that met all state and federal requirements for use when contracting with providers of home and community-based services. The efforts I've just mentioned represent a significant body of work and are consistent with the OLA report's themes of simplification, reform, and strong DHS-county interaction. We're committed to continuing our efforts to strengthen the human services system, and this includes participation in the newly created Legislative Advisory Committee on Human Services Simplification and Streamlining. Again, thank you for the opportunity to share our perspective today.
Questions, members? The on the training and the technical assistance, is the funding for that just incorporated in your funding request, or is there separate streams of funding?
Could I? Both.
Both. Is there any more detail on that at all?
Dan Hardwick, our chief financial officer, is here if you have additional detailed questions.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, members, Jane Hardwick, CFO of Human Services. Our training resources within the agency come both from our administrative appropriation from the legislature, in generally in a generic sense, and also from some specified federal funding in specific program areas.
Is there any state funding that goes along with the federal funding, or is it just the federal money is separate and then the state is just, the only state contribution is just a general appropriation?
The only state contribution is the general appropriation.
And one of the, maybe either of you can answer this, one of the recommendations has to do with local impact statements, in a sense, on our fiscal notes. And I remember Representative Latz, well, when he was a representative, passed a law a while ago. Maybe it just related to school districts, though, and the impact on school districts. But do you have the information even to provide more information in your fiscal notes on the effect on counties?
Mr. Chair, we do provide the information that we are able to do on the fiscal notes that we feel would be a reliable assessment of the cost. And that is in the cases where there is a specified county share of a particular service. And as we estimate the state's share of that service, we can also fairly accurately estimate the local share. In terms of the impact on county administrative expenses or other county program costs, the variability among the 87 counties in terms of how they approach the administration and operations of their programs and how much other local program funding exists is so variable, I think it would be not only challenging, but I think any estimates that the state would provide in that regard would not be terribly credible nor useful in your decision-making process. We have offered to provide as much program and estimation information as we can to the county associations to support them in a similar process. There is also a local impact note process, and if for additional details, some folks are here from the Department of Finance, but that is managed through the tax committee, where a request can be made, but because, again, of the complexity, the variability, those estimates take quite some time, and I think are typically then there aren't a large number of those requested.
Okay. Representative Lopez.
Thank you. The commitment on a work plan, and I assume that this was developed jointly with some county input, the March work plan, it looks to me like it's still project by project and meeting by meeting. We will continue to meet with, we will continue to do this, we will annually select a project for simplification. And I, correct me if I'm wrong, I didn't see sort of an overall framework change that would sort of guide across divisions, across programs, across interactions. And did I miss something in that? As I'm looking through kind of the commitments, they seem to be very specific to, we will, you know, participate in these meetings, we will jointly select a project, but not, it seemed to me that what Mr. Nobles was and his staff were describing is sort of a systemic issue, and it seems like there needs to be a broader, bigger discussion then to permeate all of these many things that are listed on the in the back appendix.
That is a good observation. What the work plan did was formalize a lot of the things that we have been doing on a more informal basis. It also included some items that I've heard in my role as liaison to the counties over the years that counties were interested, more interested in the relationship building. And it was also developed at the same time there was legislation moving forward that might provide that vehicle that you were just talking about, and that is this newly created committee. And so we anticipate that those types of conversations will come out of that committee, and we were not duplicating that effort.
What's the status of that committee?
That committee is to be convened after all of the appointees. Representatives are appointed, county legislators and state, and the deadline for names to be submitted is September 1st. So that the commissioner is required to convene the first meeting, and our intent was to get the names of our county and state representatives over to the legislature before September 1st and select a date in September for the first meeting, and then we will proceed from there.
Can you talk a little bit more about performance measures and how, what we can do to, on that front? Both, I think the report kind of both talks about performance measures you report on in your budget presentations to us, and that they're reported, but there's not, or they're listed, but there's not much done with it, and we certainly don't make much use of that, in my experience. And then in terms of with the counties and whether you have any thoughts on, some of the issues raised about enforcement and accountability at the county level? A lot of questions there, I'm sorry.
I'll try to remember all of them. Regarding performance measurement, that was an area, after the report was released, DHS leadership met with county leadership, and that was an area that we both acknowledged and agreed very strongly with the report needed improvement. It's an area that we have been looking at for quite some time. We did, as I said, in the work plan, that was a project that we had all agreed could move forward this year. But because we are unsure as to what will come out of the administrative simplification committee, that specific project was put on hold. I'm anticipating that that will be part of the discussions of the reform committee. I don't know if that answers. Does that get at what you're asking?
Well, a little bit. So you are taking, but the work is on hold pending this task force.
Well, it doesn't mean that we're stopping. As I mentioned, we have some of items that I highlighted that go to that, but undertaking a wider look, we have put on hold.
Where are you focusing your performance standards? I mean, because it's a pretty broad topic to tackle. Do you have any priority areas?
Actually, Jane, would you like to comment on that? Our performance measurement area is under the direction of Jane Hardwick, and she could probably give you better details.
Again, Jane Hardwick, Mr. Chair. I think we're taking a couple of different steps here. The first is to do a more comprehensive provision of all of the areas where we do have existing performance data, that exist somewhere in reports that we have within the agency, and for doing a much better job of sharing that information back with counties, so that county boards, county directors can get a much better picture of their performance in relation to other counties. The other step that we are taking will be to work collaboratively with AMC and MACSA representation to identify some other key performance areas that we would develop a more comprehensive approach to ongoing performance measurement. So we're taking that in two steps. And we have not yet identified those subject areas.
And with regard to that, you know, it's also a measure. It's also, it's good that you guys are talking, the department and the agencies, or the counties, but there's also a piece of it where the legislature probably hasn't been involved as much as we should in terms of getting performance measures back on the different things. You know, are they working or not? And holding someone accountable for whether they're happening. And I guess I'd like a reaction a little bit about who and by what mechanism can the legislature hold the I mean, we really only have connection to the department, but I mean, is it fair for us to hold the department accountable, and what mechanisms could we use to do that for work that's being done at the county level? Or is it more that we ought to, is there a way that we can hold the counties more accountable?
Mr. Chair,
what's our leverage, I guess?
I think that's certainly a challenge, and I think Mr. Nobles alluded to, and Ms. Dinod alluded to, issues of providing incentives versus disincentives. I think there's always a challenge with performance measures around punishing entities that don't perform, and if you do that in the form of taking resources away, you reduce their capacity to continue their improvement. One of our approaches in the performance measure area, in terms of the first piece around identifying areas where we do have performance data, is to let folks at least know where they're at. I think there's a lot in the human services area. Folks feel pretty accountable for the work that they do. Folks that work in the human services system are fairly dedicated to that type of work. And I think the first step is to get an understanding of where folks are at in terms of performance, and moving on from there. But I don't think we've moved to any sort of disincentive approach in that context.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any way, ma'am, that there can be a pullback on some of the rules, perhaps? I always find when I'm working with constituents that it isn't really the law as much, although I know we write them vaguely and ambiguously, but that the rules then that are a result sometimes cause the complications. And since that's one of the points made in the report, too much complexity and rules are listed, is there any way to pull back some of the rules, to repeal some of them or get rid of them?
Mr. Chair, Representative, certainly the department often looks at its existing policies to determine whether changes or improvements could occur, and you see us frequently coming in with policy changes that continue to tweak and improve our programs. The primary challenge around that is that the vast majority of those rules are based on federal or state requirements, and so I think our first step is to look at reducing the complexity on that level.
I think, you know, the accountability on both sides has to kind of be balanced. When we talk about performance standards for the counties, I think we also need to explore the performance standards on the state, because every time we propose an idea, we get a fiscal note that says we have to add some more staff people in order to make this happen. But we don't get the same thing. The counties don't have a chance to say, well, if we're going to implement this new rule or this new thing, we need, you know, four more people in this size county and two in this size. But I had heard recently that from someone that DHS is doing less rules than they used to. I know you do 150 instructional bulletins a year, and you know, for people who don't know about that, I had actually asked Jen to bring in the little red wagon. And I wanted to have the rules and the instructional bulletins from last year and the federal plans and the manuals and the legislation, and just sort of have people visually have a sense of what we're asking county workers to absorb in their life and how much they're asked to change. And part of my question about the rules process, I had been told by someone that DHS has consciously decided to bring more legislation to us that's much more specific than it used to be, rather than going through the rulemaking process, because it's easier to come here and get it done in a few months than to go through a long rules process. But the advantage of the rules process is you really have a lot of stakeholder discussion from the nonprofits, the county staff, you know, internal DHS staff, and evolving that. And I'm wondering if you could give me any sense of that, or if you could get back to us on whether or not there really has been over the years a change in that. Because it seems to me that I have noticed less activity on the rules front, which is a very partnership, integrative sort of process, and much more we get long, complicated pieces of legislation that someone carries that they may or may not understand all the implications of in terms of its implementation. So do you have a sense of that at all?
Mr. Chair, Representative, in my experience, there is not a conscious effort to move in that direction, but I would say that the complexity of the rulemaking process does often suggest that a more expedient route toward policy changes can be the legislative process.
One more question I have, and then we can move on to the county. What do you think, with this process of the task force and the work you're doing, we can expect coming back in January? Do you have a sense of, like, where the commissioner, does the commissioner have a sense of that?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't have a sense of what will come back. I know what is due to the legislature in January, the report by the legislators on the committee with recommendations. So this will occur over the next few months.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Singleman, in the past, I suppose it's been 4 or 6 years, I've had several constituents who have been very disgruntled with what's happened on the county level, and when they try to get a ruling from the county defers to the state and says it's the state's problem. And when I go to the state and I ask the department, department says, "Well, no, that's local purview. They're in charge." And so when I go back to the county, they said, "No, I'm sure it's the state." And so I'm getting this back and forth, and finally I go to the county commissioners and I say, "Well, commissioners, I've been told by the state that it's your purview to do that." And so the county commissioners did take up this issue, and they made a decision, and then the state overruled them. And so I'm really confused. When the state says it's local jurisdiction, and they won't give me an answer, and the county says, "No, it's state jurisdiction," and they won't give me an answer. Who's on first base? Who's on second?
Chair, Representative, I'm not quite sure how to answer your question. Again, I go back to the complexity of the system, and it does vary by program who has jurisdiction depending on the program and the issue. In certain instances, it may be the state. In certain instances, it may be the counties. But without more specifics, I don't know that I can.
Well,
Mr. Chair, it deals with licensing of people who take care of individuals in group homes.
Okay.
I have a daughter that's in a group home. And but this wouldn't concern me specifically, but because the fact that I do have a daughter, and they came to me asking for some detailed information on what who's supposed to be having the authority in this situation. So the licensing factor on these individuals who take care of special needs type adults and young adults came into practice here.
Representative, I do know that in licensing, the counties are responsible for making licensing decisions in certain areas, and the state makes decisions in others. That is perhaps one of the issues that we will address in the Administrative Simplification and Reform Committee. I know licensing was brought up as an area to look at.
Or, Mr. Chairman, what's really interesting is that after being told by the state that the person who had well, several people had their license revoked by the state of Minnesota because they didn't meet the qualifications. Yet, when they went before the county commissioners and had all the details delineated out in front of the commissioners, they hadn't broken any of the laws of the state to begin with, and yet the state said, no, their license can't be reinstated. So I'm really frustrated with the fact that they say local control, and yet the state has the jurisdiction to overrule even a county type of situation, and having it like in a session like this where the laws and stuff that are in statute say the person hasn't broken the law, and yet DHS says yes they have. So it's frustrating.
Thank you for coming down. The county folks, you want to come up to the table? I think it's going to be Mr. McDonough and Mr. Engstrom and Ms. Johnson. Thank you for coming down today. And if you could introduce yourself for the record as well, that would be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Ramsey County Commissioner Jim McDonough, currently serving as second vice president of the Association of Minnesota Counties. And I'll lead off today here with a few comments. We agree that this is a complex topic, and we really appreciate the OILA taking on this project. We think they did a very good job of making this topic understandable. While we don't agree with everything in the report, we agree it's a fair depiction of the challenges in the system. We agree it's a good starting point for a conversation on how to deal with and address many of the issues that have been identified in the report. AMC appreciates the opportunity to be involved as we were used to identify contacts, help design surveys, and to have an opportunity for our responses multiple times throughout the process, and then a final written response that was included at the back of the report, a joint response with MACSA that was included in the back of the report. At AMC, we have a project that we call our Futures Task Force, where we as county commissioners come together, try to identify issues throughout the state that relates to us as county commissioners, and to kind of try to grab on, start wrestling with some of those issues. This is an issue that we've had many conversations in that project, and we've come to many of the same findings that the report has come to, was concluded in the report. We really agree that this system is not sustainable as it currently is, and are very concerned about the future of the system and the citizens that we serve if we don't come together and really start having conversations about how to deal with these issues. A few comments on the variability of services throughout the state, and we agree that that is a serious problem, and some of the reasons for that have been identified, and we agree within the report, but our position is that's an area that we really have to take a much deeper look into. As you look throughout the state, there's many, many reasons why the level of service varies from different counties and different areas in our state, and a lot of those reasons can't be solved in a one-size-fits-all type approach. And I think that's an area that really deserves a lot of consideration. In our conversations at our executive board, and we've had joint meetings with MACSA, in conversations with county commissioners from out the state, sometimes it's as much as access to public transportation on where the services provided. In some counties, you have to go out and find the people to provide them. There's no public transportation to come to for that service. There's so many issues that come into the play on delivering services that the variability of services and the reasons for that really need a much deeper understanding of that and how we solve that. I really want to emphasize that in Minnesota, counties believe in the county administered system we have. We believe there's a lot of strengths in that system, that delivery service system, that connection at the local level and meeting those needs of our citizens. I think it has a huge advantage. It does have a fiscal impact to us at the local level. about $600 million annually in property taxes levied at the local level to fund these services. And it's difficult throughout the state in various counties to meet that local funding expectation of providing some of those services, the tax capacity, the tax base. A lot of issues come into play that really dramatically affect local participation in funding of some of these services. And we recognize that the state and the legislature in particular, when you're passing and having expectations of level of service and you've identified needs that you expect that the service is going to meet the same constituents you have that we have, and you want to be assured that that level of service is going to be consistent throughout the state. But then without a fiscal note, without a funding strategy, other than that there's going to be local participation on how to pay for that, the response does vary throughout the state. We recognize that. We recognize that as leaders of the Association of Minnesota Counties, we have a role in helping try to work through that with our counties. But we strongly encourage that this is a shared responsibility with the legislature, the Department of Human Services, and the administration and counties as we work together on how we fund these services. The report has some references and findings and recommendations on county board oversight throughout the state. And I want to assure the legislature that no matter where I've gone, no matter who I've talked to, no matter what county commissioners or what county I've talked to throughout the state, we all take this very seriously about how we're going to meet our citizens' needs when they're in crisis, when individuals are in crisis, when families are in crisis, when they need these safety net services to help ensure the quality of life for all of us in our communities. The difficulties on how we manage that, though, throughout the state, I think this report clearly highlights that. Clearly highlights that this is not just a small county problem. It's not just a rural problem. It's not just an urban problem. And suburban counties have a lot of the same issues, and the approaches to dealing with those issues in suburban counties might be different than the approaches in urban counties or rural counties. We have to recognize that. We look forward to the administration simplification committee being established as a way of looking at getting at some of those. We think that's a positive step in being inclusive and stakeholders being a part of the process and helping resolve some of these issues. And before I pass this on to Dan and Kathy from NACSA, my final comments to you would be that we believe the future of addressing these issues that have been identified in this report, to really addressing these issues where we can make a difference in the same people that we represent and the same people that we serve, really takes a shared responsibility and a recognition that we all have a shared responsibility, the legislature, the Department of Human Services, and county boards, and working together to come up with solutions to those problems. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I certainly could answer questions now, or we could wait till we get through Dan and Kathy here and staff for questions at that time.
Thank you very much. Why don't we move on to the other testifiers, and then we'll have questions afterwards.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm so honored to be here today. This is my first time testifying for the House. And my grandfather served in this very institution for 2 years in the early 1950s. He immigrated to the United States at the age of 26 from Denmark. And I learned from him great love for America and all she stands for, and the honor of serving our fellow Minnesotans through government service. My name is Kathy Johnson, and I'm the director of Kissing County Social Services. Kissing County is located in the upper northwest corner of Minnesota. It is bordered by North Dakota to its west and Manitoba, Canada, to its north. In metro speak, that's about a little over six hours from this room to my office. Drive time one way. Kissing County is ranked as the 18th largest county in Minnesota for square miles and ranked as the 82nd for population. We are proud of our agricultural history and the contributions we make to the world's food supply. Today, however, I'm not representing Kissing County, but the directors and administrators of the human services agencies in Minnesota's 87 counties, which make up MACSA. I am honored to be the president of the organization for 2007. MACSA is an organization which has several roles. We offer mentorship and training to new social service administrators of the counties. We work with DHS to provide technical assistance and advice for the frontline delivery of services. And we prioritize our efforts to influence and advocate for legislation that daily affects our work environment and influences the way we can deliver services. On behalf of MACSA, I would like to thank the Office of the Legislative Auditors for allowing us the opportunity to give our feedback to the report during the evaluation process. Although we do not agree with all the conclusions of the report, we do believe the report does point to many areas where Minnesota can strengthen its human service delivery system. A few years before this evaluation was undertaken by the OLA, MACSA had gone through its own internal process of evaluating the present and future in the delivery of social services to our state. To that end, we developed a policy paper which identified a similar list of issues and concerns about our current system, which were also mentioned in the OLA evaluation. Our organization has used this paper to help guide our directions and prioritize our mission as a partner with the state in delivering these important services to our citizens. After the release of the OLA report, MACSA quickly took action in looking at the report's recommendations and prioritizing those recommendations which we felt were most critical to counties. We then took our priorities to AMC for further discussion, and through a work process, together we are committed to work toward implementation of our priorities. Here are the top five priorities listed in the report as seen by MACSA. Number one, to establish ongoing work group of department and county officials to simplify and streamline services laws and administrative requirements. Number two, assess service funding streams and propose options for equalizing county property tax burdens, assess MOE requirements, and evaluate funding formulas in relationship to spending. Number three, develop a system of preparing local fiscal notes. Number four, establish better channels of communication with DHS. And number five, develop a performance-based evaluation system which measures of effectiveness, efficiency, and availability of services can be used on a statewide basis. We value what we do and want to be held accountable for what we do. At this time, I would like to briefly... I would like to have Dan Engstrom, who's Administrator and Director of Pennington County Human Services, to briefly discuss our top five priorities. Dan?
Thanks, Kathy. Mr. Chair, committee members, good afternoon. My name is Dan Engstrom. I am the Director of Hennepin County Public Health and Human Services. I echo the sentiments of Commissioner McKenna and Kathy Johnson. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today on behalf of MACSA. I'd like to spend a little bit of time elaborating on the five priority recommendations that Ms. Johnson spoke about and provide some insight into why counties feel these recommendations are particularly critical. The report cites growing complexity and funding challenges as primary contributors to inefficiencies in the administration of human services. MACSA agrees and has also recently identified these factors as critical challenges facing the human services system. We welcome the recommendation that a work group be established to simplify and streamline human service laws and administrative requirements. As you know, legislation passed this past session that directs the Commissioner of the Department of Human Services to convene an advisory committee consisting of both legislators and state and county staff to explore ways to reduce program complexity and inconsistency between programs. The committee is set to commence this fall. This is a good first step, and MACSA looks forward to being actively involved with the ongoing work group and the work of this group. As I mentioned, Minnesota's approach to funding human services contributes to much of the complexity we experience. Reliance on property taxes results in variability and inconsistency in services provided across the state. For example, recently due to an unanticipated increase in demand, many counties exhausted their state allocation for two programs. Emergency General Assistance, and Emergency Minnesota Supplemental Aid. These are aimed at providing help to adults without children who experience an emergency. When this occurred, some local agencies, Hennepin County Human Services and Public Health included, elected to go to their boards to request additional property tax dollars to carry them through to July 1st, when new funding would again be available. By doing this, these counties were able to continue to provide EGA and EMSA to their residents. Others took a different approach and chose to cease operating the programs until new state funding was available. The state formula for the Consolidated Chemical Dependency Treatment Fund, CCDTF, and related maintenance of effort requirements is another example. Counties receive funding from the treatment fund, but are required to contribute local matching dollars called maintenance of effort, MOEs. The treatment fund allocations are based on a complex formula tied to county population and median household income. The amount of MOE a county must contribute is based on historical spending for chemical dependency treatment beginning in 1986. Over the years, because of this very complex formula, significant disparities have arisen in the MOE amounts required by counties across the state. Many counties are contributing a significant larger percentage to mandated chemical dependency services than others. Across the spectrum of human services, there are many other examples of inconsistencies created by complex funding. When these inconsistencies are taken together, it's not difficult to understand how a person living in one county might have a different experience when accessing human services from a person living in a neighboring county. Therefore, MACSA also supports assessing funding streams and formulas, MOE requirements, and options for equalizing county property tax burdens. The recommendation that a system be developed to prepare local fiscal notes on proposed legislation is also very important. Too often, legislators are left to make decisions without adequate information about the cost implications of certain proposals on the taxpayer. New programs or requirements that add work without adequate funding often force local governments to rely on property taxes to accommodate the additional workload. An example of this is the Family Stabilization Services language that was included as part of this year's Omnibus Health and Human Services Bill. This provision established the requirement that county employment services providers develop a comprehensive case plan with families not making significant progress in the Minnesota Family Investment Program due to a variety of barriers to employment. Although a local fiscal note was eventually developed, it came too late to be abused during deliberations. The more than $16 million ongoing annual price tag for counties is significantly more than the approximately $4 million in one-time funding that was appropriated over the next biennium. Although MACSA is supportive of the provision as a matter of policy, there's considerable concern about the ability of counties to carry out the increased responsibilities without adequate funding. Newly passed legislation will require foster care parents to receive training in dealing with mental health issues. There are cost implications for actual training and potential delays in getting foster care providers approved that were not considered as part of the legislation. MACSA and DHS have already begun work to establish better channels of communication. The fourth of our top five recommendations from this report. MACSA is reevaluating its internal structure for communication, and we understand DHS has developed a work plan which includes a number of strategies aimed at formalizing and improving communication. An example of an effective communication strategy is the State-County Partnership Work Group, sponsored by DHS's Children and Family Services Administration. This is chaired by Assistant Commissioner Chuck Johnson and is comprised of county and DHS representatives. This group meets monthly to discuss issues of shared concerns, both the counties and the state. Recent topics of discussion have focused on strategies to address the impact of the Federal Deficit Reduction Act, new rules around the reimbursement for children's day treatment centers, and even implications of the very report that we're focusing on today. Finally, MACSA is strongly supportive of the recommendation to develop a statewide performance-based evaluation system. Such a system should focus on outcomes, have clear incentives, and have expectations for performance based on clear criteria. It should avoid dictating process or using reverse incentives, such as an increased county share for regional treatment centers that was included in the 2007 mental health legislation. To ensure program improvement, feedback should be provided in a timely fashion. There are areas in which clear performance standards are already established, such as the Federal Child Protection Permanency Indicators, Child Support Enforcement Measures, and the Minnesota Family Investment Program Self-Support Index. In other areas, such as adult and child mental health, case management, and community-based waiver services, expectations tend to be process-oriented and outcomes are less well-defined, making it difficult for local agencies to determine exactly what they are being measured on. Again, I would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. As local human service agencies, counties are on the front lines of providing critical services for some of the state's most vulnerable residents. We take our charge very seriously, and we look forward in cooperation with our state partner to implement the recommendations of this report and to improve services to our shared clients. Thank you.
Thanks. Reaction or formal position you guys have in terms of consolidation of certain of county services? So consolidation of counties in terms of their delivery of social services? And do you have any sense of what have you had any discussion about what a minimum population threshold would be? Some of the issues that were raised in the report?
Well, I have just a real, Mr. Chair, I have a real general observation, and it doesn't get into specific programs. Some of those were mentioned earlier as a result of a survey that county administrators and county commissioners provided information on. But I know that we've been in conversation with DHS about programs where there's a lower touch and maybe a higher tech way to approach clients, maybe those types of programs that should be better administered by the state. And those programs that need much higher touch and perhaps lower tech approach to the everyday client problem would be best to stay with our county administrative system. Just a general way to look at it. I know that Minnesota Care, for instance, is an example where there could be more automation, even more automation put to that program. It would make it much easier for DHS to administer, and it would be a program that could be administered, I think, very systematically at the statewide level rather than at the county. And the county does Minnesota Care as well as the state. It's kind of a shared responsibility at this point in
time. Mr. Chair, I would just like to add that for my region of the state, Region 1 in the northwest corner, we are the size of Vermont with a population density of 9.2. So I don't think population can be the only thing to consider, but you must also consider geography, because putting people on the road and windshield time is not going to help increase or better our services, that it's a multi-factor.
Do you think that's an issue worth exploring in terms of, and what are counties doing at this point to consolidate some of the delivery of services, if anything?
And quite frankly, I believe that's a decision that needs to be at the commissioner level, but I, you know, definitely with some input from administrators, I can only speak for my county in that before I was hired 8 years ago, they did some exploring with their neighboring counties to see if there was any interest in consolidating administration, and at that time there was not. So I don't believe that there is... I think counties would like to explore and maybe have some help in looking at that option, but necessarily dictating to them might not be the best way to accomplish what you're looking for.
Ms. McGovern. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple comments. At AMC, we, especially through our County Futures Task Force, but in many arenas, we continue to provide an opportunity to have multiple discussions in all areas of county government, all responsibilities of how can we best provide that service. And a part of that conversation is always you know, do we need to consolidate? Should we be grouping? And there's numerous examples in many areas of county government where we do that throughout the state. And from our experience, the results from those consolidations and collaborations of working together really come from when it's initiated at the local level rather than mandated from above. I think that the concepts and thoughts of saying we need a minimum number of people to have a service providing agency on the surface might sound like that's a good place to start from, and it'll get counties, you know, in gear of trying to come together and provide services. I think Kathy has laid out just some of the difficulties on that, but the reality is that sometimes for these collaborations and consolidations have to happen, it might mean the human service director retires in one county, and that provides the opportunity for the neighboring four counties to come together to meet and start having those conversations. And when that collaboration is successful and comes together, it works so much better when it happens at that local level for the right reasons rather than coming as a mandate from somewhere else. And I know at AMC we are committed. We see the value, and our counties see the value in that, but the political will and the political difficulties of making that happen, we want to make sure that when we have these collaborations and consolidations, they actually do what we're expecting them to do, and that's provide a service in a better way in a more cost-effective manner.
Mr. Chair, let me give you three examples where counties are collaborating. I'm speaking primarily from the metro perspective, but there are also other examples outstate in the same area. Mental health and crisis services. These are services that where we know that individuals cross county lines, and on any particular night that they have a mental health crisis, they may live in one county and be in another county when that crisis occurs. So there are crisis services where we're taking a metro-wide approach at this time, creating funding streams that come together and creating a response to that collaborate rather than have silos that exist for providing those services in each county. Supportive housing services where the same thing is, we know that emergency housing crosses, particularly in the metro area, crosses county lines, and it would be a much better approach to have a metro approach to supportive housing than just county by county. And we're working together with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and other programs on this effort. And workforce employment. Jobs, where the jobs are across county lines from where people live, and that's another area where counties work together. If you look at the workforce investment areas, there are counties that are combined providing employment services in conjunction with joint counties rather than just county by county. So there's many examples where we have this joint working relationship.
Just a comment on that. The county-based purchasing is a good example of counties working together. There's an expert in the back there, but I think there's 20-plus counties, and I think all one or two are jointly work with other counties to do that.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, and even on those, we talked about planning sort of things, on county-based purchasing, I know that the seven metro counties jointly examined that when that option was first available and jointly paid for some consultants to look at the whole issue. And, you know, in the end, only one stepped up to really seriously pursue it. But they all, you know, pulled together. So I think there's a lot more informal things going on than sometimes is given credit for. I was intrigued by the discussion of how the funding and the policies really intertwine, and I think we can't separate those, because I think that when you set performance standards in one area, and if you set the bar high, which is our human tendency to want to do that, is that then you will tend to distract resources from something else that isn't being as monitored or as watched. And so I think we need to kind of look at those two things, as well as the impact on property taxes. And I have to say, for the first time, and I think in 20 years now, the House has its committee schedule such that two of us can serve on taxes. I'm on the property tax division, and Representative Liebling's on the full tax committee, and so we actually have, for the first time, a link between the Human Services Committee and the Property Tax Committee, and I found that useful. I know all of you are involved to some degree in national associations. Are you aware of other states that have really used an outcomes-based approach? We as opposed to a process and keeping track of whether or not you followed every, you know, dot on every form that you're supposed to fill out on the computer and processing a case or that sort of thing. But, I mean, are you aware of an outcomes-based performance system that you could recommend us looking at? Because that might offer some of that flexibility that I heard you talk about in terms of the large county versus the small county versus the geographically sparse population, that sort of flexibility that you need while still having some common standard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osler, I did hear a presentation from, I believe it was the state of Delaware. Now, that's a very small state and very homogeneous, but it did impress upon me that they really do use an outcome-based formula for funding and look at outcomes each year, and they basically evaluate programs based on the prior year's outcomes, and they establish their priorities and their funding based on the performance. We do know that there are other counties that we have been looking at. Montgomery County comes to mind, and I believe there's a couple counties out in California that have really done a lot of work around outcome-based budgeting and how performance is really the key to what programs continually get funded in their budget process.
Mr. Chair and Representative Osler, if I may just add to those comments in that I believe that outcomes might be a fairer way to evaluate counties in that sometimes when you're just looking at percentages, smaller counties take a hit on that. And just as I was curious on my own county's evaluation process with the OLA, so when I looked at that evaluation, at one point I passed, so to speak, because I had a high percentage of my people eligible for health care on health care programs. I didn't pass, however, because of I was not processing a high number of applications for people on who are eligible. Now, for me, that just is a signal that there's not an understanding of Kitson County, and that Kitson County is a small county getting smaller, and we don't have an increase in our population of new people coming in and applying for those programs, so that we already have our people on who are eligible and who want to be on. So I think, again, those outcomes and understanding the having the counties help to set those outcomes would be a much better way than to just look at percentages, because percentages aren't always going to tell us the whole story.
Yeah. And Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I don't sit on our Human Service Committee for the National Association of Counties, so I can't give you any specific examples. But actually, our annual conference is next week, and I know that I will be participating. And I will, when we're out there, I will try to get some information for you to see if there are some states that do county-administered services that are similar to Minnesota, and how they've used outcome budgeting and outcome and performances in models, and see whatever information I can get, we can forward on to the committee.
One question that I had was about third-party providers, and that seems to be one of the areas. I'm guessing Kitson probably has bigger issues with that than Hennepin would in terms of availability. Is there anything we can do to kind of get at that issue? Or do you not do much contracting out with other folks to provide your services?
Mr. Chair, I do contracting, but my providers are few. And so that sometimes when we're looking at, choices for our clients, their choices are very few because we just don't have providers. As an aside, and something that, yes, you could do is I know where we're looking at evidence-based practice, and I know the department is looking at evidence-based practices, getting, again, at those seems to be a point where we can get our outcomes. However, with the evidence-based practices, there are fidelities that come with those that we in our area of the state just can't reach. Those fidelities would be you have to have this doctor and this psychiatrist and those things. And if you put evidence-based practices on our region of the state, we're just not going to have the professionals to meet those fidelities so that we are able to then
have those type of evidence-based practices. I think when we can move more to a outcomes-based or look at if what we're doing is producing the outcomes you want, does it really matter whether that's evidence-based or not? But to look at, are we doing the work that you're requiring us to work? Are we living within those outcomes that you are looking at? That makes much more sense for an area of the state like mine.
Mr. Chair, on the same question. In Hennepin, our perspective is that we buy about half of the services that we need. We make, or we have our own staff for the other 50%. What we've done with providers is we've looked at some other models around contracting for outcomes where we've grouped like providers and held them to performance measures and reviewed their response to those performance measures. And over time, as we go through all of our contracts, we will have a better understanding of matching one provider against another, who's doing a better job for us, and use that kind of an accountability process to reward contracts for the future.
Well, two other questions I have before we finish up here. One is just in terms of this funding issue. I think is an important one. I mean, how well does the state perform, the legislature, in terms of to the extent we set formulas or the department when they're setting the formula, in terms of taking into account some of the disparities or inequities. It's not necessarily inequities, but disparities between the counties, whether it's in terms of, you know, in Hennepin, the high populations of needy people, or sparsity in other counties. I mean, how well do our formulas work with regard to that? And I'm sure it varies from program to program, but do you have any reaction to that?
Well, I think that probably some of the formulas need a lot of work, and some of them are okay, and I think there is equity. It's probably something that's a very good topic as we move into the review.
Well, and maybe the way I should phrase that question is, could you come back and get to us kind of areas where you think we could do a better job in terms of how we set up our formula and areas where we don't? I think that might be helpful as we move forward in kind of prioritizing what we want to look at there. Did you have a question, Mr. Madison?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it's kind of piggybacks onto your earlier question about consolidation or something to that. As was mentioned, as one of the testifiers said, that there are some consolidation, like workforce development, where the counties kind of go together and things like that. I'm thinking of, I just had conversation with a district judge, and they're broken up, the judgeships are broken up into districts, 10 judicial districts. Would that help to take the DHS and make it more kind of a go-between, where you have a regional emphasis of, say, the 7-county metro area have a regional office there that deals with those 7 counties and do that throughout the state, or is that complicating the system more?
Any other testifier?
Mr. Representative, if I understand your question, I think in the past there has been more of a regionalization of state assistance provided throughout the state, where there were dedicated DHS employees by region, and there was more or less one representative that a group of counties had to call, and they built a relationship, and they could pretty much count on that. And I think they began to kind of understand each other and how the various workings within those regions of work. I believe that, you know, due to funding issues for DHS, some of that has eroded over time. There still is liaison activity, but it's not, as you indicate, kind of a bi-region basis, but there was some of that in the past.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I guess I would just like to caution that I think you need to know what is the intent, because you could have some unintended consequences. And so if your intent is to simplify administration, is there a different way to do that other than just making counties consolidate? Because and quite frankly, as a resident and a administrator in Kitchen County, in my own region, we are kind of the country cousin. And
if you start forcing some type of consolidation, I really feel for the people of Kitson County. Will we get the services that we are used to getting at this point in time? Will we continue to get that? So again, I think it's, you know, what's the intent, and is there more than one way to get to our intent besides just forcing consolidation? And I think that might be first if we could define what the intent is.
Do you have a sense, a reaction about how much of the variation that maybe is found in the report and you've talked about a little bit has to do with and maybe difference in terms of property taxes being levied on residents, has to do with just choices made at the county level, so choices above the baseline that the state sets? I don't know if that question is clear, but I mean, that would be another explanation for some of the things the legislative auditor found, is that these are just, we want this kind of variation and this much variation because counties can make their own decisions and levy property taxes as they see fit to do that above state baselines. How much of that is going on?
Well, Mr. Chair, a couple of examples. Some of those decisions are going on, but they're for very good reasons. For instance, in Hennepin and some of the Ramsey and some of the other metro areas, there's a lot of diverse population in terms of language and ethnic diversity and so forth. And there's been property tax that has been spent simply to create vehicles so that there's better ways to communicate with those populations, either as culturally specific workforce providers. There are certain shelter requirements that some of the metro areas have on any given night that it isn't really a choice, it's something that has to be done, but it's property tax that's used to fulfill those needs. So some of the diverse population dictates in some respects what counties have to do in terms of how they spend their property tax.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the question. I think we recognize at the State Association of Counties that happens. I think, you know, we've had lots of conversations, and I know there's been numerous times proposed in many different forms of just eliminating mandates. And I don't think we've ever taken a position in support of that because we recognize there is a value to ensure that no matter where you live in the state, you have access to a level of service that we would agree would be acceptable. And in some cases, without those mandates, we're not sure that level of service would occur in all parts of the state consistently. And from a Ramsey County, metro, urban county perspective, we see this happen a lot, even with the current system, that there is a migration to where services are provided in a more effective or more in a different way than other parts, and sometimes that's a responsibility or comes from a decision that the legislature made. Sometimes that comes from a decision or a rule that DHS has done, or sometimes that comes from a decision that a local county board has made. But there is migration in this state to services that aren't always necessarily accessible at a level throughout the state. And that concerns us as counties, as elected county officials, and we think it's an important part of the conversation as we move forward to ensure that we have equal access throughout the state.
And just a follow-up kind of related to that, I'm sorry I'm taking so much time, but in terms of the change in 2003 to go into a block grant kind of approach to a lot of our funding, I mean, what is the effect of that had on some of these issues that we're talking about in terms of variation in services provided?
I'm going to have first crack at that, and I certainly will have Kathy and Dan, I'm sure, will have some comments. I think from my perspective as a county board member and as a person who has to set policy at the county level and help provide funding for that, a lot of the policy of actually doing the block grant, I think there was a lot of good. It gave flexibility to meet some needs throughout the state. I think the problem for us as county commissioners throughout the state and doing our budgets and dealing with that was typically that was more of a kind of a block and chop type approach where the programs might have been combined and done into a block grant, but there was less money total, and we were expected to provide the service level that was before. And so I think the approach of block grant funding
at a policy level is really good, because it does give us that flexibility. It's just when you get to that you know, level of service, and how do we fund that, and is the intent to actually provide us a better way of providing services, or is the end result really just ending up paying for more of those services on local property tax dollars rather than state or federal dollars?
Mr. Chair, I would agree with both comments, and specifically in Hennepin County, there was some erosion based on the O3 cut for quality of our work, quantity, and the timeliness of it. We simply made staffing reductions, and caseloads are still growing, and we have less people to process that work. So that just meant that our quality, quantity, and timeliness was eroded, and we're still feeling impact.
And Mr. Chair, my comment would be, I would echo those, of course, on a much smaller level, but again, those block grants were able for us then to create services that made sense in Kitson County. Now, what on the reverse side, what happens then is that you start getting that service inequity again, and but I'm not so sure that's a bad thing. For like Kitson County, our MFIP employment services provider is over 65 miles and two counties away from us. So that block grant allowed me the opportunity then to say, how can I create services and get what I think would be value-added services, still pay a little bit to my ES provider, but bring services back to Kitson County. So again, that works very well for me, but then on the other hand, it's going to create some of those inequities. But I would say the people of Kitson County are served better.
Representative Park.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a comment on a couple of remarks that were made. One, the issue of trying to provide the same services throughout the state. From my economist hat, when I hear that kind of comment, as much as we want to, you know, keep people in their homes and do various kinds of things, I know during a session at one point, service provider indicated that to deliver Meals on Wheels to a particular home in the county, it was an hour trip each way, you know, each direction to take that hot meal out there. There's a point at which, socially, in terms of taxpayer resources, that it no longer makes sense to maintain, you know, to provide a Meals on Wheels equally across the state to every single individual who would like to have it. And that if you get to that level of need of service, then you have to move to town or to an urban area, wherever, you know, in order to obtain those kinds of services that's what's required. So I think we can't just, with a broad sweep, say that, you know, we should have equal services everywhere in the state, anywhere you just happen to individually choose to geographically locate, whether it's, you know, and the same thing with the comment about the mental health, you know, trade off between evidence base that may suggest you do a certain level of psychiatric care, and maybe you don't have those kind of psychiatrists. Maybe you can still deliver the outcomes without it, but maybe you can't. So maybe at the point this particular individual needs a certain level of psychiatric care, they can't live in Kitson County any longer if they want, you know, care from that's provided by public resources. So I think there's some kind of inherent trade-off here that meaning we will never get to a completely geographically equalized system if we choose these different lifestyles and live in different parts of our state, and that we, as policymakers, have to recognize and acknowledge that when we go forward.
Representative,
I had a question for Ms. Johnson. Is Halleck in Kitson County?
Yep. Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, it is.
Okay. Well, just to follow up, I mean, there's a hospital in Halleck that will never be financially able to sustain itself, but we have to have a hospital in Kitson County, in that part of the state, because the miles to the next hospital are, what, 80, 90?
Mr. Chair, Representative, correct.
So there are places where we decide to fund hospitals like that in different ways so that they can sustain themselves, even though economically they can't exist.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
But we're still Minnesotans, and we're still part of the state.
Good point. That's probably the theme of this whole thing, I suppose, at the end. Well, thank you for coming down. I really appreciate it. And I think the last thing we need to do, members, is just adopt the minutes from the joint hearing we had with the Senate on June 26th. who was there? Representative Liebling, have you reviewed the minutes?
Yes, I have.
All right, Representative Liebling moves that we adopt the minutes from the June 26th meeting. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you, everybody, for coming in. Oh, and before we break, did you have any comments you wanted to make, Representative Laughlin, where you want to go from here?
Well, I just want to say that, I mean, it'll still evolve because the legislatively directed task force that'll be a partnership with counties and DHS will yet be evolving. But I think for our work group, we're going to focus on our end of the problem, which is the legislative end, and how can we contribute to a process that doesn't make this worse, and hopefully we'll bring forward some legislation that'll make it better. And to everyone in the audience and to everyone who testified, your ideas and input are definitely welcome, and please pass them my way. We'll make sure that you know what we're working on and what we're doing, but we're still going to put together a work plan that dovetails so that you're not asked to do the same thing with two different entities. And the other thing I would ask everyone to think about is, think back on the last session and how much time did you individually or we as a group spend talking about just sort of the base budget, the base operations of Health and Human Services, and how can we change that balance? Because we have a system that's really based on focusing on the new initiative, on the new proposal, and very little review of what sort of is the current day-to-day struggles of the current service system. And I think part of our challenge would be to think about ways that we can help balance that a little bit as we go forward.
Chair Huntley, any comment on that? No. Okay.
We're adjourned.